Welcome to Hot Weekly.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, a weekly podcast for the haunted attraction haunt entertainment community. Whether you're an actor, owner, or just plain aficionado, we aim to be a podcast for you. And we return once again, now 2 weeks out from HauntCon.
Yes.
HauntCon is coming up, and we're going to go to the HauntCon and do HauntCon things. I just made that up on the spot. You see, this is what
I don't think anybody could tell. It looked like it was, it sounded like it was really planned
this
out.
This is what a creative genius can do on the spot.
Nothing.
Absolutely.
Got it.
Okay. If you want more of those fancy jingles, we're at HauntCon. We're not HauntCon. Holy crap. We're at hauntweekly.com, a much better website. No, actually, both sites are great.
Oh, wow.
Wow, we're starting knee-deep in shit this week, aren't we?
We are.
We are at hauntweekly.com. We're also hauntweekly on Twitter, hauntweekly on Facebook. tinyurl.com/hauntweekly is our YouTube channel, and you may subscribe to us at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever finer podcasts are distributed. And we're only about, I would say a minute and a half in, and I'm already getting the dirty looks from Crystal, so.
I just don't know if they got that we're at hauntweekly.
We're at hauntweekly.com. www.hauntweekly.com. That's our website, hauntweekly.com. It's at www.hauntweekly.com. You should check it out. It's brand new. Well, as of last week, but.
Yeah. That's still new.
It's still new. But yes. Okay. Now, we have a very, very special episode this week, or one that actually means a lot to us personally, and we'll get more into how this conversation happened, but yes, we're talking about small haunts.
Yep.
And why good things can come in small packages.
Like tiny houses.
Yes.
Tiny haunted houses.
Indeed. This is, like I said, we're going to talk more about it in a minute, but it comes from a thread on Haunters Hangout, and it got us super excited about this topic. Well, me at least. I don't know about Crystal.
Yeah.
And so we built a show around it, and that's what we are bringing to you today. But first thing is first, it is time to do conference reminders. It is an odd episode. Crystal, you are the oddball. Please do us the honors.
Okay. As you said, HauntCon is coming up. Halloween and Party Expo, January 25th through the 27th, here in New Orleans at the Ernest Memorial Center. And it features us. Jonathan's going to be speaking. We will be having a tour of our haunt on that Friday, the 25th.
Yes. Friday the 25th at around 8:30.
8:30 to 9. Please RSVP if you plan on stopping
and
by.
And if you need transportation, get in touch with us yesterday.
Yeah. Because we have, like, special things, surprises planned.
Yes, we do. And they might even be physical in nature.
Yes. So we need to know how many people are coming.
We need to know how many physical things we might need to provide. So please RSVP or you ain't getting anything.
Yeah. All right. And you can find out more about the actual conference and
at hauntweekly.com.
No, at hauntcon.com.
Oh, that's the site. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, it's going to be a rough night, everyone. I apologize.
Yeah, we're
in advance.
Totally going to keep Ellie awake. We're being way too loud.
Okay. We should not be recording this late. Unfortunately, today got away from us, so we're recording stupid late. It's one of the reasons for it. All right. So yes, that's, I'm speaking 9:30 a.m. on Friday.
Yeah.
Haunt tour at 8:30 p.m. on Friday. And if you can't make that night because they are doing the tour of Terror on the Coast.
Right.
I understand completely. Get in touch with us again. You can do that at hauntweekly.com. We have the contact form now.
Yes.
And Facebook and Twitter also are great ways to get in touch with us. Let us know and we will work something out. We will do what we can to get you here.
Yep.
Promises.
Yes.
All right. After that, everything's a letdown.
Oh.
I'm teasing. Actually, I would love to go to this one if I was near California.
Yeah, me too.
But it's Haunt X, the Haunters DIY Expo, February 23rd and 24th in Pomona, California at the Fairplex. They'll be touring Coffin Creek, both lights on and lights off. And it features a costume ball, Haunt X, thelettering.com for more info.
Okay.
About that.
And then it's the Maize Corn Party. Dallas, Texas, and Oklahoma City. It will be February 27th through March 2nd. It is at the Westin Dallas Fort Worth Airport Hotel. It will be touring various mazes around Dallas and Oklahoma City, including Yesterland Farm, Mainstay Farm, and more. TheMaize.com for more info on that.
And that's maize like corn. I mean,
M-A-I-Z-E. It's the corn.
It's the corn, yes. It's like Manos, the Hands of Fate.
Yeah.
Manos is Spanish for hands.
Yeah.
So the actual title is Hands, Hands of Fate.
Yes.
Because reasons.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. And after that, in St. Louis, Missouri, March 21st through the 24th, it's Transworld's Halloween and Attraction Show at the America Center, now co-located with Transworld's Christmas Show. We'll feature a party at City Museum on Thursday, a performance by Vampire Circus on Friday, and a Vampire Ball on Saturday. Learn more details at the Haas Show, HAASHOW.com. And that brings us up to speed on conferences that are upcoming.
It does.
And I've got to say, I have been seeing a lot of buzz about HauntCon this year.
Yeah.
It's really interesting to me to compare this year to last year with HauntCon. Mm-hmm. Because, like, last year, I didn't hear anything in the run-up.
No. No, and I think that having it in the same city has helped it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Because it's really made it so that people know where to go. Like, Transworld's always in St. Louis.
Yeah.
And mind you, St. Louis is a great location because it's very centrally located. It's easy to get to from anywhere in the country. It's a hub. There's a lot of good things about hubbing a conference in St. Louis.
Right.
But it's New Orleans.
Yeah.
It's Nolens, y'all.
It is.
Now, we have been very, speaking of HauntCon real fast, we have been very active in various groups online giving suggestions and hints
right.
for what to do while you're at HauntCon. Just to repeat, we have a map of some of our favorite, coolest, and hippest things to do in the city. Kid, people say hip, right?
No.
Okay. But some of our favorite places in the city at hauntweekly.com/map.
I'm going to have to throw something at you.
It'll basically redirect you to a Google map, which has multiple layers and all kinds of stuff you can do and look at. But it'll show you some of the places we were talking about in our previous episode. That's two episodes ago now. Where we listed our recommendations for HauntCon. So definitely check that out if you get the chance.
Yeah.
A lot of time went into making that goddamn app, so you better like it.
Yeah, I realized that we did not put any of the escape room games on there.
No, we did not.
We really should, like, mention them.
Well,
somewhere.
You know what? I can do that live. I'll go back and add some of our escape games to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some of our favorite escape games.
There are some that we definitely recommend and some that we do not.
Yes, decidedly do not recommend. I'll say this, though. If you're interested in haunted attraction escape games,
yeah,
the Mortuary is right off Canal Street, and that's going to be
the
quintessential example of that in the city, I think.
Yeah, it's the closest one to get to.
And it's right across the street from... Sacred Grinds.
Right.
The coffee shop where you can literally sip your coffee next to the dead.
Yes.
It's awesome. Okay. But anyways, back to the topic. Because we do actually have a topic this week.
Yay.
I know that's kind of a weird thing for us to have.
There's a plan?
There's a plan and a means and show notes and stuff.
Yeah.
We put stuff into this and that sounded really horrible. All right. Okay, this whole thing started with a question on Haunters Hangout that really piqued my interest. It was by Dan Crawford, and I'm not going to name everyone else who answered or did whatever
right.
throughout this because it gets kind of convoluted very quickly. It's a lot of names. But he asked a very simple, very pointed question. How small is too small for a professional haunt? Do you think 3,000 square feet is doable? And I've got to say this sparked a really good conversation. The answers were, I think, pretty divided.
Mm-hmm.
Some flatly said no.
Yeah.
One person literally said nothing smaller than 10,000 square feet.
Yeah.
Holy shit, dog.
Yeah, Anyway, we'll get into it.
Well, it's interesting to contrast that view to like Leonard Pickle's view, where you should never have a haunt bigger than 5,000 square feet.
Yeah.
There's just an interesting contrast here that I find very entertaining.
There is.
Other people and others said that they'll basically bitch about it, you know, unless you stuff it with like $3 million worth of high-end animatronics or whatever.
Yeah. Which I don't necessarily agree with that either.
No. Others said that it may work, but it depends upon your competition. You have to look at what's open next door to you and how you fit into your local haunt scene.
You kind of have to do that anytime you open a haunt.
And that to me is it's sound advice, but it's sound advice always.
Yeah.
Even if you have like millions of dollars and you're looking to open up the giantest mega haunt in the area, you still have to figure out how you fit in and what your competition is.
Yep.
You may not work in that area.
Right.
But many, including myself, said yes. And there were actually a couple people on the thread that was really cool who operate haunts around that size and talked about how they made it work.
Yeah.
Some really interesting thoughts there. One person said he operates a haunt that size. He charges $10 a ticket, but is able to stay open year after year simply through a matter of quantity and the fact that his expenses are so low.
Right.
So it was a very, very interesting conversation. And Crystal did not weigh in. I showed her this thread kind of after the fact.
Yeah.
Because Facebook's weird.
Yeah, well, and I've been having trouble loading all of my groups today, and I don't know what that's about, but it's
Facebook's
annoying.
Facebook's weird in that it, like, shows you different people, different things.
Yeah.
And, like, Crystal didn't see it until after I showed it to her, really, or until I commented, or what. I don't remember which was, but, yeah, you didn't get it till later, and that's just the luck of Facebook there. But I said an emphatic yes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to be clear about this episode, we are home haunters, a very avid home haunters, and we do work in a very tiny space. But I'm approaching this from a customer standpoint.
Right.
Which is big of home haunters as we are, we're probably equally big haunt customers.
Yes. Yeah, we spend more on going to haunts than we do on building ours.
Yeah, to be fair, though, that's because we've been doing it now for 14 years, and we pretty much own everything we need to own.
Yeah, I didn't say there wasn't a reason.
Until someone decides we need a new fucking queue line and need to drop, you know, $400 at Home Depot that Tuesday.
Yeah, well, it's an awesome queue line. So
it is. It's probably one of my favorite queue lines I've ever been to, and it's in my backyard. That makes it even more awesomer.
Yes, I'm happy about that.
The queue line is great, but anyways. So we've been to a lot of small haunts, though,
right,
just through having been to so many haunts. And the truth of the matter is, some worked really, really well.
Yeah.
Some, not so much.
Yeah.
As I said, we also build a very small home haunt. Our haunt, we constantly bicker about what the size of it is, even if our difference now is not very important.
Yeah.
You say it's 500 square feet. I say it's closer to 600.
Yeah.
I don't really see how that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know.
That's a functional or practical difference. But, you know, we are very familiar with the tips and tricks for building a haunt in a tiny space and making it work.
Yeah.
Think of it like tiny house living, but haunted house.
Exactly.
And one of the biggest and the most common, and I think one of the best compliments we get, is that our haunt feels so much bigger than it is.
Yeah.
In fact, every year it happens, we have people who get to basically the midpoint in the haunt, the back hallway, and they go, oh my God, it's still going?
Yeah.
In fact, one person literally said our haunt was a TARDIS.
Yeah. I did not hear about this.
That was one of my favorite compliments ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Our haunt is a TARDIS.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, you told me about the one guy who's like, so it's just your garage? Just the garage.
Just the garage.
Comes out the other side. What the fuck?
There was like a lot in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the thing about it is this. We do love our small, low budget, creative haunts, creative targeted haunts, and they can work. I have no doubt in my mind that they can work in every respect of the word.
Right.
It's just they require a ton of planning and preparation.
Yes. And it's especially good when you're starting out because smaller spaces are cheaper.
Smaller spaces are cheaper, and it really teaches you how to maximize what you got.
Exactly.
Every dollar, every square foot, everything gets maximized.
Yep.
Now, a quick compare and contrast thing here. As part of the Lost Souls tour we did in Chicago, thank you, Japes, for inviting us and having us on this. It was a very educational experience. We visited perhaps my favorite small haunt ever. It was Dead Rising. Now, we don't know the exact size of it.
Yeah.
They don't advertise it for obvious reasons. I had heard someone say it was around 2,000 square feet. I don't doubt those numbers. 2,000 to 3,000 square feet sounds about right.
Yeah.
It was small.
Mm-hmm.
However, they put a ton of focus on interactivity and in improving the overall experience.
Yeah. Yeah, characters had dialogue.
They were you were expected to banter back and forth.
Right.
You were supposed to play with them. You were supposed to live in the scene and engage. Yeah. And like I think it was the very first sequence after you got in and dealt with the angry cop dude outside.
Yeah.
And by angry cop dude, I don't mean the detail cop on duty. I mean the actual cop character.
Yeah, the character who's supposed to keep everybody in line.
Both literally and metaphorically in this case.
Exactly.
He did a very good job, I thought. He was one of my favorite characters of that entire trip, actually.
Yeah.
But the very first sequence was a church scene.
Mm-hmm.
Where they did something that I don't think I've ever done inside a haunt.
Yeah.
They had you sit down inside pews.
Yeah.
And listen to a, I'm doing the air quotes that you can't see, sermon.
Yeah.
And it's a evil church.
Obviously,
it's in a haunt. And, yeah, you're playing back and forth with the pastor, and he's doing things to unsettle you and make you uncomfortable.
Right.
Make you ill at ease.
Well, trying to.
Well, that didn't work on me.
Yeah.
I'm perhaps the worst test subject for that in all of human history, but...
Yeah.
But they also had a Simon Says game at the end, which I didn't honestly get what was supposed to be haunted attraction-y about that.
That you got candy... And candy comes with Halloween.
Yeah, fair enough.
If you actually knew how to play Simon Says, which some people did not.
Yeah, our group was especially shit at it.
Yeah.
Well, my group, we were separated for this.
We were.
My group was especially shit at it. I guess yours was too, from the way you're talking.
Yeah, that's the first haunt I've been to where I've been separated from you since we started, I think.
Yeah. Because the angry cop fucks with your group order on purpose.
Yes, and it actually, that did unsettle me a little bit.
But very little of the haunt was straight walked through. There maybe was like one or two rooms in there that you just simply walked through.
Correct.
And it ended up having roughly a 12-minute walkthrough according to our watches.
Yeah.
And considering it was at $18 a ticket, it's not necessarily the best, but not the worst in terms of price-to-minute ratio.
Right.
And then there's the tons of haunts we visited, the small haunts we visited at tourist locations.
Right.
Now, you didn't go to this. This was my second haunted attraction experience, was at a Leonard Pickle haunt, I'm not kidding, in Myrtle Beach. I had no idea Leonard Pickle ran it.
Right.
Until, like, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But it was right there on the strip on Ocean Boulevard in Myrtle Beach. It's in a strip mall. It's probably only, like, 1,000, 1,500 square feet. It's teeny tiny. But great use of space, great walkthrough, great concert, and great actor conservation, too, in that literally one actor could do it. And if you ever go to one of Leonard Pickle's talks...
Yeah.
About haunt design. Especially when we start going off the rails about the triangular design that we're getting back to in a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah, he always talks about this haunt, and I actually went through it as a teenager.
Yeah.
I can actually say that. And we've also been to tons of carnivals and JC haunts that are oftentimes working with very tight space and very low budgets.
And I think the Ripley's Believe It or Not haunt was pretty small, too.
It was
bigger than 3,000, but not by much.
Well, if you take out the elevator...
Well, and you have to, I think, because that isn't part of the haunt.
No, it's more of a setup for it. You probably might actually be around 3,000 square feet.
It's just the ride to it, yeah.
Yeah, that I'd have to go back and experience it again, which I'm totally not doing.
No. Way overpriced. Not unless we did it at Halloween when they were at full staff.
Yeah, actually had actors and stuff. Yeah. Seriously, though, to the actor who was in that rip, working that Ripley's haunt that day that we went and
right before
South By and San Antonio and South By, you are the hardest working person in haunting.
Yeah.
I'm not even kidding.
Yeah.
I think you literally operated like 18 scares or something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
It was ridiculous. Literally the hardest working person in haunting. Kudos to you.
Yeah.
Please don't die.
Yeah. That would be bad.
But here's a thought I had as we were working on the show notes for this. The largest haunted attraction we've ever been to in terms of advertised square feet.
Yes.
Was Terror on the Coast, Gulfport, Mississippi.
Right.
It advertised itself as over 100,000 square feet.
Yes.
Or it's either over or at 100,000 square feet. It mentioned 100,000 square feet.
Yeah.
The smallest haunt we have been together, smallest pro haunt we've been to together, was Dead Rising,
mm-hmm.
which was in Chicago, and clocked in 2,000 to 3,000 square feet, estimated size there. Please don't take that as gospel.
No.
Here's the thing. Dead Rising had a longer walkthrough than Terror on the Coast by about 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And that sigh you hear is the reason... The exasperation is exasperation, because when Terror on the Coast promoted itself as this big, huge haunt, and we're like, oh my God, we didn't even know it was there.
Yeah, and it still promotes itself as the largest haunted house on the coast.
And it probably is.
Yeah.
In terms of square foot, it probably is. I don't dispute that. But when we went there, so much of the floor space was not used.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you just kind of plowed through it.
Yeah.
And we literally were surprised when it ended.
Yeah, it was definitely confusing. And it just...
Well, and the frustration of it was, we have to drive about an hour to 90 minutes to get there.
Yeah.
From where we are in New Orleans. Not that bad, but still a drive. Mm-hmm. And still a noticeable, significant drive. And then we were in the queue line... For almost another hour,
No, it was close to two. And it's 86,000 square feet is what they advertise as.
Okay. I thought they'd said 100,000 at one point, but 86,000 is functionally close enough.
Yeah.
But yeah, 86,000 square feet is what they're saying now. Fine, whatever. They're still, at that point, was that 30 times bigger than Dead Rising, by our estimates?
Yeah.
Ish?
Yeah.
There was no interactivity, nothing slowing you down. Even us as slow haunt goers.
Right. And we were stuck with, well, not stuck with, we were paired with, partnered with another group that was grouped also with. Very slow.
Yeah.
So,
but, and we got out of there in just over 10 minutes. Meanwhile, Dead Rising by our watches had a 12 and a half minute walkthrough.
Right.
The point I make to that is not necessarily to slam Terror on the Coast.
No.
Because, like I said, we haven't been in several years. They could have completely changed.
Right. And they had good sets when we were there.
They're beautiful sets. Beautiful and great actors, too. Some really, yeah. really good actors.
Very good entrance. I won't spoil it for the people who are going.
Indeed. I do recommend going to Terror on the Coast. This isn't me trying to, like, hopelessly bash. I'm just trying to say what our experience was. What was this, 2-3 years ago?
Yeah. At least 3.
I think it was 3 years ago. We haven't been back since.
Yeah.
Because it is too much of a drive, especially during haunt season for
right.
us. But the point is, small haunts can pack more, at least in terms of time and experience, than big haunts if they're dedicated to doing it.
Yes.
But you have to put in the effort.
How do you do that?
Well, we got a whole shitload of tips we're going over.
Really?
Yes, really.
What's the first one?
Layout. This really is the big one.
Yeah.
And where I think we're going to spend most of our, or at least a lot of our time. If you have a small haunt, now by small in this case, I would say anything sub 5,000 square feet.
Yeah.
I think that's a good barometer.
It is.
You've got to focus on a tight layout.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to get to do any of the big, grandiose scenes.
Right.
You're not going to be like Netherworld did, where you walk in and there's the forest and the projections overhead and blah, blah, blah. You don't have the space for that.
No.
That ship sailed. So go the opposite route
mm-hmm.
and use claustrophobia to your advantage.
Not claustrophobia tunnels. Those take up a lot of space.
Mm-hmm. And but, a lot of wasted space, too.
Yeah.
but claustrophobia, the feeling of claustrophobia.
Yeah.
Keep your rooms small and your path winding.
Yes, and one tip about the path winding is have your entrance and exit for each room be on opposite corners.
Yeah.
That way people have to walk through the entire scene to get to the next room and bing, bang, back through it like a pinball. Excuse me.
Yeah, there have been a lot of small haunts we've been to and have been through where the entrance and the exit are just a straight line to each other.
Yeah.
In a room. And it's really frustrating me because, like, one of the haunts that we actually worked at did that in a couple of rooms.
Yes.
And the owner's like, okay, I need you to work the whatever room. And I'm like, we have a room that does that?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The fuck? We have an organ room? When did that happen? When did you install that? Oh, shit. I walked through it like 20 times, never knew it was there.
Yeah.
Literally, that can happen.
Mm-hmm.
Even to your actors, it can happen.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's good advice in general, but it's especially important if you have small square footage you're working with.
Right, because it makes it, you know, breaks it up very nicely.
Yeah, every room, every section has to count.
And also, even though you can't do the giant projections and the big stuff, people are going to be closer to your sets than in those big rooms. And so you've got to focus on the details.
Yeah.
Because where in a big room, it's going to be lost. In the small rooms, people are going to notice.
Yeah.
And that's notice everything, but they're going to notice.
That's one of the challenges we deal with is that we know, and we're going to get to our specific rooms in a second, but we deal with this problem of we know that every wall, every prop, everything we have is going to be within probably 4 feet of human eyes.
Yeah, four or less.
4 or less.
Yeah.
4 is probably the max. That's unsettling.
Yeah.
Like, Crystal is roughly 4 feet from me right now as we're recording this.
Yeah.
And I can see her quite detailed.
Yes.
Even the stripes in her silky sleepy pants that she's wearing.
They're comfortable.
They are very... They look comfortable.
Yeah.
Now, on the Haunters Hangout thread, going back to that, one person suggested using the triangular layout to conserve actors. I will say that worked very well in the Leonard Pickle haunt I went to.
Right.
I've never done a triangular layout.
No.
I've never felt a need or had a scenario where I thought it would benefit me greatly.
Right. And we tried to do something like that, but it just didn't work in our space.
No.
And we also had actor areas early on, which were basically rooms for actors, which we found out, hey, that's wasting space, you know, so... Yeah. Our actors are pretty much in view, other than the few surprises.
Yeah.
So.
Because here's the thing. Without using triangular layout, we managed to fit 5 rooms into 500 to 600 square feet.
Yeah.
Pretty comfortably, actually.
Yeah.
And technically, it's 4 rooms, 1 hallway.
Right.
But from a square foot standpoint, I think the hallway is actually the biggest room.
Yeah, because it's...
It's long. It's 20 feet long.
There's nothing we can do back there. We've tried several different layouts. It just doesn't work.
But here's the secret. None of our rooms are larger than 10 by 10.
No. In fact, most are smaller than that, I would think. I haven't gotten out there and measured it, but I think they're closer to 8 by 8.
Well, using the panels, we don't do much more that's more than much bigger than 2 panels wide on a room.
No.
And that sounds really small, and it is. And I'm not saying... You need to go to that extreme, but maybe a 12 by 12 limit. A 12 by 12 works well because that's 3 panels.
Yes.
You could do a 14 by 14 too, but basically 12 by 12 I think is kind of an ideal because that's 3 panels by 3 panels.
Yeah.
That's easy for us to work with in this industry.
Yeah.
Keep your rooms small. Yes, it means the sets may not be as big or as fleshed out as you're hoping.
Mm-hmm.
But you can do a lot in that space.
Yeah.
If you're willing to put the effort in a tinier space.
Yeah.
Basically focus on making your room smaller and focus on limiting straight paths. I've got to say, to this end, prop-based layout has been a godsend.
Yeah.
Learning about and mastering prop-based layout has been a savior for us.
Yeah. And be prepared to make props, you know, because... when you're working with tiny spaces, things that are built for big haunts are not going to be...
Or big or regular rooms, even.
Or regular rooms are not going to fit in your haunt. You know, we've built a bed before because we had a bedroom scene and we need a bed. And so we built one that was about half the size of a twin, but still held a full adult.
Yeah. And it didn't look like comically small either.
No.
No, it was about, like I said, a little bit smaller. I think the thing was we had her chained to a wall, but on the bed.
Yeah.
So it was much shorter than a twin, but about the width of a twin.
Yeah, it was about 4 feet wide.
Yeah, it's about 4 feet.
Because we built a panel.
Yeah, we used a
platform.
I started with a panel platform, but the result of that was, you know, we have beds.
Yeah.
Just none would fit in that space and leave a walking path.
Yeah.
So we built one that was comically disproportionate. You wouldn't sleep on it.
Right.
But it didn't look stupid in the room. It held a grown-ass adult.
Yeah.
Well, what do you want?
Yeah.
And didn't look stupid, so it kind of worked.
Yeah, and everybody... And that's one of the things you have to remember is that your customer's brain will fill in some of those details.
Yeah.
Like, it won't notice that the bed's too short.
Yeah.
It'll fill in that that's
well,
a
we're
bed.
Bad at... Humans are bad at depth anyways.
Exactly.
We're really bad at depth.
Yeah.
In a similar note, skip on the interstitial hallways. This is a big thing in haunt design now where you have a room and a hallway that's a little short break that leads into the next scene. And Leonard Pickle's big on this, going back to him. But he's big on it because it's a great way to break up your scenes without using curtains or other divides.
Right.
It is a good thing. I think it's overall a positive in haunt design. Mm-hmm. But you ain't got the fucking space for that, so you ain't doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, and as much as we like being able to put in breaks for, you know, hard scare and then have a moment to relax and then hard scare again, you aren't going to be doing that either.
No, these are the luxuries you cannot afford in a small space here.
No.
So yeah, and also when looking for the actual place you're going to put your haunt, you're going to set it up, remember that the shape of the space is incredibly important.
Right.
If you're doing 20,000 square feet, it can be almost any goddamn shape it wants.
Yeah.
You can make it work.
Yeah.
But if you're doing 5,000 square feet, 3,000 square feet, or whatever, mm-hmm. it better be fucking square.
Yeah. And without, like, support columns.
And dead center. Oh, my God.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it better be fucking square without anything impeding what you want to do.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Focus on that whenever you're looking to rent or buy.
Yep.
Okay, tip two. Interactivity. The biggest gripe people have about small haunts is the short walkthrough time.
Yeah.
And I get that. It really sucks to pay your $15 or $10, whatever, and only be in and out in 2 minutes. It would suck.
Yeah.
Focus on interactivity, though. This is a way to keep people in rooms longer.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, this is the thing Dead Rising did really, really well. And another small haunt we went to, Necromanor, in Shreveport, started to do very well,
yes,
but then did not.
Right.
The first two sequences had very high interactivity,
mm-hmm.
which they actually did something pretty interesting with the first room where they had an actor reading the rules as part of an interactive scene.
Yeah,
I thought that was kind of cool.
That was.
It was. And then they had another like art curator character.
Yeah.
I didn't get that one.
No, it
was... Most of it went nowhere.
Yeah, there was no payoff at the end. There was a lot of talking about art, but there was
art
no
and
payoff.
Look at this painting carefully. Look at this painting carefully, and then nothing happened.
Yeah, it's like, okay, I'm looking. There's nobody coming behind me. There's no drop panel on one of the paintings.
No, seriously, a drop panel behind one of those paintings might have actually fucking worked there.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the few times you could tell people, look at this, and have it be a drop panel might have worked.
Yeah.
But anyways... and the rest of the haunt had virtually no interactivity, and we were in and out of it seemingly in no time.
Yeah, it was very short.
And they said that we would have gotten the better show if we come after 10 p.m.
Right.
Which I say, fuck that.
Yeah, that's because not a good strategy.
Your best show is whatever time I happen to buy and redeem my ticket.
Yes.
Just as a customer, that's your best show. That's your best time to go.
Yep.
Anyways, neither here nor there. But focusing on interactivity keeps people in rooms longer. Now, this is going to hurt your throughput.
Yes.
And this has actually been kind of supported by Rise. We've spoken to the people there because they say that throughput in Risewell Asylum, their more interactive and attraction, is around 240 per hour.
Yeah.
And having been through it, I don't think he's lying. I think it's technically possible.
Yeah.
I'd be goddamn impressed to see it pulled off.
Yeah, me too.
I don't think he's lying. I think he's probably theoretically accurate, but I'd still be impressed.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's going to cap it at about 250 per hour. Think about this. Groups of eight every 2 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what that is. However, this is how you increase the bang for the buck, and you also create an experience larger haunts can't do. Larger haunts that rely upon cranking people through this massive space don't have time for interacting. They don't have time to mess with you personally. Yeah. We ain't got time. You got to get to the next room, motherfucker. You got to keep going.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes, you've got to keep going. You may wind up in a conga line as a customer, which is horrible to be in.
Yeah.
And the big ones.
Yeah, and the big ones. But yeah, this it's going to hurt your throughput, but it may help in terms of creating a very unique experience and giving something that they can't get at a bigger haunt.
Right.
Which is awesome. And once again, going back to the comparison, Rise versus Risewell, Rise is your traditional big mega haunt with 10,000, I don't know how many square feet it is, but it's going to be five figures at least, you know what I mean? Big haunt. And then Risewell is this tiny little fucking haunt off the side where they do all the interactive stuff.
Yeah.
And Risewell is not big.
No,
it's probably
not.
Bigger than 5K, but compared to Rise,
yeah,
it's nothing.
No, it's not. And I love Risewell.
I love Risewell too. I love Risewell way better than I love Rise.
Yeah.
Though I gotta say their hayride was pretty bitchin' this year.
Yeah.
Well, they're really stepping up their goddamn game there.
They are. But no, I like Risewell because no matter how many times I go, I get a different experience every time.
Yeah.
Because of the interactivity.
Except you never get to be the non-disease person.
I know.
To be fair, I don't think I've ever been in the other room either, in your room.
No.
Hey, Rise, if you're listening to this, switch us up next year. Just please.
Yeah.
I don't know why you look at her and think she's diseased. I mean, clearly I'm the one with the diseases.
I think that it's because I look like I will be scared more than you.
I don't know. Please, can I be diseased next year and she be the non-contaminated one that pushes the button?
We'll send them a message.
Yeah, we'll send them a message. But in all seriousness, that's a very interesting contrast because Risewell is probably only a fifth less than that of the size.
Yeah. It's very small.
It's very small, but it creates such a good experience and it's about the same walkthrough time.
Yeah.
So focusing on that interactivity can really, really help not only extend your walkthrough time, but provide an experience that you can't get at a larger traditional haunt.
Right.
Or what we think of as a traditional haunt. Okay, tip three, actors. Focus on recruiting actors that are good at interactivity and are flexible.
Yeah.
You're going to have fewer actors because you have less space.
Mm-hmm.
This is like Pokemon. You've got to be the best there ever was.
Oh, my God.
You've just got to be that. I mean, even if they're not the scariest actors per se, people that are good at interaction, people are good at playing with the crowd, people that can fill those roles are important.
Yeah, people who are good at ad-lib.
Yes. Oh, God, ad-lib. Improv in general, yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, just remember that every actor is probably going to be operating multiple rooms, multiple scares, and probably doing a lot of interactivity with the crowd. You need really good actors in this specific area.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing. Your actors are really going to make or break your haunt.
Yes.
You know, the years that we've had that have been good, or the years that we've had that I think we've been bad, the difference every time has been the actors and how they came together and how they gelled. Mm-hmm. We're so lucky to have the good crew we do now.
Yeah, we are.
We really are. We have an amazing crew right now. We've had some shit crews in the past.
Yeah.
And it showed.
Yeah. Yeah, there's... Yeah.
Yeah. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Yeah.
Okay, tip four. Pricing.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot charge like the big haunts.
No.
The minute per dollar rule is still in effect. And yes, hopefully you're doing what we're talking about, the interactivity, to give yourself some more time. But it's still a thing.
Right.
So if you're a smaller haunt, focus on making your haunt a value haunt and consider pricing it so that it can be a supplement to bigger haunts.
Right. And also, yes. And also remember that whenever you bring your price point down, you make yourself more accessible to families.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
So you're probably going to have more teenagers.
More kids.
More kids. Younger crowds coming through.
And think about it like this. There were, for the longest time, there were two haunts in New Orleans that were, I think, 2 miles from each other.
Yeah.
If that. House of Shock and Chamber of Horrors.
Yeah.
House of Shock was, toward the end there, $30 per ticket.
Yes.
Chamber of Horrors was, I think, 15 or 18?
15 or less.
Yeah, it was in, but we'll just say 15 because it makes the math fucking easy.
Yeah.
I know that's not
accurate. It's half the price.
Exactly. It's half the price. And so when you go to the two, even though they were super close, mm-hmm. they had very different audiences. House of Shock got your hardcore haunt crowd, your Pantera fans.
Yeah.
All the Pantera fans.
Yeah. Very, very few
kids.
Kids.
Very few families.
Very few teenagers, even.
All adults. Younger teenagers. Almost all adults. All drinking.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, Chambers had families. It had parents. It had kids. It had teens. It had a mix of ages. Was it as busy as House of Shock? No. But it reached a very different audience. And that's what's going to happen with a smaller haunt at a different price point.
Right.
Now, that being said, focus on ways of, there are ways you can still upcharge your haunt.
Yeah.
Let's be clear. You don't have to, like, totally tank your price.
No.
If you have a great location.
Yes.
If you are like Leonard Pickle's old haunt and on the Ocean Boulevard in Myrtle Beach during tourist season.
Right.
You can upcharge. If you have a unique selling point, if you are, I hate the term extreme haunt, but whatever. If you're an extreme haunt, if you are doing something truly unique or original, and that's a selling point, you can upcharge. Or if you just have an amazing brand, you can upcharge. Also, don't undercharge. For the love of all that is pure and beautiful in this world, don't undercharge. I have seen more small haunts undercharge than overcharge.
Yeah, definitely.
It's the big haunts that I find overcharge.
Yeah, I do too. And I think that it's part of, you know, we're smaller than the guys down the road, so of course we can't even charge half as much because we're not half as... But that's just it. You can't compare yourselves to them, and you can't say that you're half as good just because you're half the size.
Yeah, they're saying, like, we're a fifth of the size, so, yeah, we can't justify charging even half. Yeah, it's stupid.
Yeah, no.
That's the dumbest argument I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, no, you put a lot of work into it. You put on a good show. You charge.
And you have your own unique selling points.
Exactly.
Ideally.
Then you should be able to charge at least half of what the big guy down the street is doing.
Basically, just go for a price that's a value, not a steal.
Yeah.
I know that's a weird phrase, but it makes sense when you think about it. If people come to your haunt and think, wow, this is a steal, you're undercharging.
Yeah.
If people think this is a good value, you're probably about right.
Yeah.
Just saying. Okay, tip number 5, marketing.
Mm-hmm.
You still need a unique selling point, and frankly, it ain't going to be your size.
No.
So, what do you do that no one else in your area does? I'm just asking. There's no, like, answer to that.
Yeah.
I know what you are thinking.
No, you don't.
Oh, so no penis jokes?
No.
Oh.
I was thinking of how funny it would be if we're the smallest haunt in the area.
You know what? That might actually fucking work.
I would go and see it.
I would go and check that haunt out. So you, maybe these show notes just go right out the fucking window on this one. That sounds pretty good. You put that in your marketing, I am definitely there.
Yeah.
But yeah, what is your unique selling point? What do you do that no one else in the area does?
Right.
Yeah, just do something unique in marketing. Do you tell a good story? Do you have a legend behind your haunt?
Mm-hmm.
Are you a different style of haunt that's doing something obviously different?
Yeah.
Think about it. You know, what do you do that separates you from everyone else around you? Market that. And even though I'm a big believer in setting expectations with your marketing, mm-hmm. I don't believe you have to say directly you're a small haunt in your advertising or anywhere else.
Yeah.
The reason is this. You're going to communicate that idea with your price point and with the fact you're not talking about how big you are.
Right. Yeah.
In this situation, what you're not saying conveys this issue.
Yeah.
So as long as you don't position yourself as something you're not, you're probably fine.
Yep.
All right. Next, and wrong. It looks like we're on track to end this on time. Tip six, our final tip, customer experience.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that money is not the only cost customers face. Going back to Tarot on the Coast, I don't even remember what we paid for the tickets. Do you?
No.
I don't recall.
I could look it up.
Oh, but don't bother. It doesn't matter. Because what are we actually, you know, frustrated with? It's the hour plus drive there. It's the out to
the waiting in line.
It's the time cost.
Yeah.
Time cost is huge.
Yes.
And a lot of haunts don't think about that. They think the only expense is the cash one because that's the one they can convert into goods and services.
Right.
But the time cost from the customer is very important for their experience. So if your haunt is small and shorter, you need to find a way to make it a better time investment.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it could be your location.
Yeah.
Like Necromancer, going back to them, they had the good foresight of being in a shopping district.
Yeah.
It was very interesting. It was a shopping district you couldn't drive onto.
Right.
You had to park like in BFE and walk into this area.
Through all of the shops and past the casino and...
Yeah. They had casinos, they had restaurants, they had stores, they had things you could do.
Right.
So theoretically, you can make a night, and I forgot what it was called, the shops on the river, insert name here, whatever the hell it was. But you could spend it even there and make Necromancer a part of it. And that would be okay.
Yeah, and it was in Bossier.
Bossier City is Shreveport, basically.
Yeah, it's across a bridge, basically.
It's across a tiny bridge.
Yeah.
And I say tiny bridge because I live in New Orleans, and I'm used to much bigger bridges.
I know.
It's actually a pretty sizable bridge.
Yeah.
I just live in New Orleans, and every day of my life, I cross the Mississippi River Bridge, which is the fourth busiest bridge in the country, and fucking giant.
Yes.
Sorry. Neither here nor there.
No.
But yeah, figure out how to fill out the time. Maybe bring in some vendors. Maybe offer food and drinks, souvenirs, games, and other stuff you can do. But basically, what can you do to justify the time investment into your haunt?
Right, because you have to calculate that in.
Yeah.
You have to think about how much people are doing to
And like I said, this is a situation where location can help. Because if you're around restaurants, if you're on the way to a store...
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, into a shopping district or whatever.
Yeah.
Or another tourist attraction. You can make yourself a part of that. Even if you're near another haunted attraction.
Right.
You can be part of that. Because people can go to multiple haunts in a night. Trust me, we've done it.
Every
many
year.
Many times.
Yes. Every year.
Every
multiple
year.
Years.
Multiple weekends every year.
Yep.
We've done it. It's very easy. And... Yeah, you can be that supplemental haunt you can the people go to in addition to whatever else they're doing.
Yeah.
But think about how you're going to justify that time. Don't be that haunt that's way out in BFE that everyone's got to drive to for 30 minutes or an hour.
Yeah.
They only get 10 minutes of haunting and then they got to go home.
Right.
Even if your price point is really great, people ain't coming back.
Nope.
But yeah, in the end, and it's a good time to wrap it up, small haunts can work, but they gotta be lean and mean.
Yes.
Think about this. If you're a small haunt, you're gonna be surviving on smaller ticket prices, because like I said, you can't charge.
Right.
The same way. And you're gonna be surviving on less throughput.
Yeah. That's a hard balancing act.
That's not even a balancing act. That's all the shit the one side act.
Yeah.
That's a dumping everything on the floor act. No, yeah, you've gotta figure out how to make that work. So keep your rents cheap, keep your staff costs and other costs low. Do not purchase expensive props and sets.
Yeah.
If you are the type of person who is unable to control their spending, may I recommend avoiding the trade show floor at both HauntCon and Transworld?
Yes. And don't buy things before you know the size of your space.
Looking at you, John LaFlamboy.
No, you aren't.
Didn't he do that?
No.
Oh, that's right. He knew the size of the dragon.
Yes.
But no, okay, in terms of people who can't control their spending when they hit a trade show floor.
Yeah.
Sorry, John Lefemboy, we love you.
Yes.
But we saw the video.
Well, and he told us.
And he told us. And just, yeah. Maybe avoid the Trans World Trade Show floor. Anyways.
For other marketing tips, you can go back to our episode 35 on guerrilla marketing.
Yes.
Because you will definitely want to know about where to market things that the big haunts might not think about.
Yeah. Well, there's like that whole evolutionary theory about like jungles, how there's this canopy of trees that form. And they get all the pretty, pretty sunlight and all the food from that. But yet somehow there's all the shrubbery on the floor too. And they survive just fine because they're able to live off the light that the trees let through, because it's not worth the trees' effort to capture that light.
Right.
But they are able to survive on it. Because when you're that big of an operation, it doesn't make sense to chase every single dollar or chase every single,
Right.
You got to go for the big strokes. Basically, be the shrub, not the tree. That's what I'm saying.
Well, if you're a small haunt, you have to.
You have to, yeah.
Yeah.
Keep things simple and tight. Make sure that your haunt can survive on what you earn. Do your math, do your calculations, make sure you're okay. And don't try to go toe-to-toe with bigger haunts and bigger name haunts especially.
Yeah.
Try to position yourself as a supplement, not a replacement. This is a good chance for coordination and collaboration.
Right. It is.
And here's the thing. Their marketing can help you.
Yes.
Because if their marketing gets people interested in going to a haunted attraction, and people start Googling and then looking it up, and they see that you're nearby, you just became part of the trip.
Yes, and definitely do all of your online stuff. Don't skimp on,
Facebook, Google, and all, Google Maps and all that crap.
And put in some ad dollars towards that, too, so that whenever they search for haunts in your area, they actually find you.
Yeah, I agree completely. Online is going to be your bread and butter in terms of marketing, because you're not going to be pulling a lot of radio or TV.
Yeah, online and local.
Yeah, online and hyper-local.
Yep.
I would say hyper-local, even like your neighborhood.
Yeah, exactly.
Not even necessarily your city.
No.
But yeah, I mean, it can work. It really, really can. Just realize and recognize you're going to be building a very different haunt than a much larger haunt.
Right.
And you're going to have to be focusing and literally sweating the small stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, just be prepared for it. It can work. We've been to plenty of small haunts that we loved and endeared themselves to us.
Yes.
The main thing is that those haunts really put in the effort to do something original and creative with that space. So much so that I didn't even realize how small it was in most cases.
Yeah.
So is there anything else to add?
No, I think I've put my 2 cents in.
In 2.5 cents?
Yeah.
Well, on that note, everyone, you have been listening to Haunt Weekly, episode number 163 for small haunts. You can find us at hauntweekly.com. I totally forgot how to do the outro there for just like a split second. It's like, and what the fuck am I saying here? Okay. You can find us at hauntweekly.com. We're on Twitter at hauntweekly. We're also on Facebook at hauntweekly. tinyurl.com/hauntweekly is our YouTube channel. You can find all previous episodes there for easy perusal and listening. We're also available on Google Play, iTunes, and Stitcher. But until next time, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And we will see you guys next week. Well, we won't see you. You'll be listening
the week
to
after. Some of them.
We'll be seeing you the week after, hopefully, if you come to HauntCon. But you'll be listening to us next week.
I think they've got it.
Did they get it?
Yeah.